Wherever you are, we are. Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Today is Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. This is News One Now with yours truly, Roland Martin. Glad to be with you on this day. That is Rick James. It is Single Artist Thursday. Yasha, what you turn the music down for? Turn it back up. Single Artist Thursday, right here on News One Now. That's when we play all one artist all day, going in and out of break, and we chose to make it funky, playing little Rick James. So hope you enjoy that. We talk a little news, talk a little information, and of course also let you get your jam on. So glad to be with you on this day. Lots of things going on, but of course, many of folks. How many of y'all ready for Essence Fest? It's no longer called the Essence Music Festival. Y'all notice that? It's no longer called the Essence Music Festival. It is called Essence Fest. They changed it last year. I was talking to Michelle, the publisher, Michelle Ebanks, and she told me that they did that because the festival has gotten to be so large, to be so much more than just music when it comes to the empowerment stage, when it comes to Family Day. In fact, what's happening today is really something new. Again, started last year where Thursday is Family Day. And they used to focus just on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But they've added so many different things that today is a new day. And so what they've done is, so today is Family Day, and then they've gotten lots of different things. They had, I think it was like 30,000 people who went in this park last year. So I mean, a huge, huge thing they're doing down there. So, of course, we are headed to Essence Fest. News One Now is radio as well as television. Tomorrow, I'm going to be broadcasting live from the convention center. What room am I broadcasting in? Is it room 235? Yeah, room 235. And so if you're going to be at Essence Fest, feel free to drop by, say hello as I broadcast tomorrow. Beginning at 6 a.m., beginning at 6 a.m. So we look forward to having a great conversation, a great dialogue, of course, right there. And so we of course, always enjoy seeing you, seeing my fans, and getting to shake your hand, take photos, kiss the babies, all that good stuff. And so that's what we are looking forward to. Lots of different things going on there. In addition to that, I'm going to be hosting, moderating or emceeing this entrepreneurial thing happening tomorrow. And we'll actually be featuring some of the folks in that tomorrow, folks who are going to be making various entrepreneurial pitches. And so all kinds of stuff is happening down there. In addition to that, of course, and it's called Power Moves. It's called Power Moves NOLA. That's what it's called, Power Moves NOLA. So looking forward to it. They provide up to $150,000 when it comes to investments for folks who are looking to launch their own company. So looking forward to that. And of course, I'm going to be on the stage tomorrow, also interviewing various folks, the center stage, the Essence stage, and then Saturday, of course, at the Empowerment stage, talking about what's next when it comes to politics, things along those lines. And so, again, we've got a lot of things happening, a lot of things going on. Hope you are, if you're going to be in New Orleans, I look forward to seeing you. And so we certainly look forward to that. So I just hope that you, and if you're not going to Essence, sorry. I hope you're still going to have a great 4th of July weekend, enjoying friends and family, all of that good stuff. And so, again, just lots of great things going on. And always glad to see so many people. Like last year, 400,000 people came through New Orleans for Essence Fest. That's a whole lot of folk. You know, it's always good. Also, of course, we have Roland's Rules for Essence Fest. I'm going to drop some of those a little bit later. One of those is, man, brothers, don't be afraid if you think you're so cool, you can't rock a sweat rag. Because it gets a little hot down in New Orleans. The forecast also includes some rain as well. And so we'll be paying attention to the schedule to make sure everything is all great. So lots of great stuff for you today, folks. Of course, yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Civil Rights Act by President Lyndon Baines Johnson. And, of course, that changed so much for the lives of African Americans. But one of the things that folks don't realize is that if it wasn't for Republicans, and we talked about this beforehand, if it wasn't for Republicans, the Civil Rights Act would not be law today. What's also amazing is Congress is so screwed up. Congress is so screwed up that today, the Civil Rights Act probably would never get passed. Isn't that stunning? All of that, folks, coming up today right here on News One Now. Got to pay some bills right now. You know, you can't do this without paying a couple of bills. Got to pay your bills no matter where you are and where you're from, folks. The segment of the show brought to you by Bahamas.com. Your Islands of the Bahamas dream getaway can be a reality. Go to Bahamas.com for more details or to book now. Call 1-800-BAHAMAS, 1-800-BAHAMAS, 7 after the hour. This is Single Artist Thursdays. Rick James right here on News One Now with yours truly, Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
13 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. I'm Roland Martin. Cold-Blooded by Rick James, Single Artist Thursday. Playing his funky music all day as we get ready for Essence Fest. Folks, you can always join the conversation by calling 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Today, 50 years ago, was a lot different than it was yesterday. For African Americans all over the country, but especially African Americans living in the South, because of the passage or the signing into law of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. A lot of times we think about various events, various historical markers, and clearly this day was one of the most important. It is unfortunate, though. It is unfortunate that we have to actually celebrate this day, because that should never have been the case. But the reality is, African Americans were never treated as full Americans from the moment this country was created. We talked about that yesterday with Gerald Horn as we discussed his book. As we talked about his book dealing with the reality of being black in this country. His book, of course, is Counter-Revolution of 1776, which breaks down how slavery played a critical role in the American Revolution. So we go all of those years. We go all of those years from the creation of this country to the writing of the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution. And we get to 1964, and then all of a sudden, those things that should have been simple were not. And so it is signed into law. That law outlawed or made it illegal to discriminate based upon race, color, religion, sex, national origin. The particular law ended discrimination in schools, work at public facilities. A landmark law, but unfortunately, it was, even though it was signed, black folks still had to fight for it to be enforced. And that is one of the things that we must acknowledge. Of course, the law also, the reason there is a civil rights division of the Department of Justice is because of this particular law. The U.S. Commission on Civil Rights is a result of this law. Don't think for a second that it is irrelevant. We also go back to history. You go back to Southern Dixiecrats. Yes, individuals who were Democrats, who were some of the most violent racists you have ever seen. They did not want to see this bill become law because they wanted to maintain a separate and unequal system. Strom Thurmond, longtime South Carolina senator, then a Democrat, tried to shut the bill down, filibustering for more than 24 hours. In fact, 24 hours and 18 minutes, which still stands as the longest one-man filibuster on record. But one of the things that we have to understand is that so much of this was paid for by the blood of so many people, black and white. And it is so unfortunate. It is so unfortunate that even today, we are still fighting for basic laws, basic freedom, basic equality. You go to the EEOC website, and you will still see suit after suit after suit, settlement after settlement after settlement of African Americans having to sue to fight discrimination, to stop it. So our fight has not ended 50 years later. The fight continues, and it's unfortunate that we have to keep fighting and keep the stress levels and having to do all these different things. But that's what happens, unfortunately, when this country was built on the foundation of not liking people with my skin color, many of yours with your skin color, and wanting to keep you enslaved. Where it used to be about the shackles that were on us, now we have to contend with the invisible shackles. Coming up next, we'll talk with Bob Woodson, longtime conservative, getting his thoughts on the Civil Rights Act, what it means, but also what it means for us today. 20 after the hour, this is News One Now. Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
26 after the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Glad that you could be with us. July 2nd, yesterday, marked the signing of the Civil Rights Act by President Lyndon Baines Johnson, Dr. King, and others, Attorney General Robert Kennedy. They were all there at the signing. Yet, as we reflect on that, we acknowledge how much has changed in this country. But what's also interesting, when people are being honest with themselves, they will realize that what also changed dramatically has been the political landscape, where at that time it was Southern Democrats called Dixiecrats who were the most violent racist you've ever seen, folks who stood in the way of progress, who wanted to maintain the separate and unequal system that relegated black folks to not even second-class citizenship, but literally third-world conditions. And it was a combination of Republicans, Northern Dems, a very interesting combination of folks who made that law possible. But as we look at today, was very interesting is this country is so screwed up politically. It is so fractured that I highly doubt, such a monstrous bill couldn't get passed today because of the utter chaos and dysfunction in the nation's capital. I mean, it is beyond. It is beyond ridiculous when you look at what's happening in D.C. So I'm curious to know from your perspective, what do you think has really changed the most? And does it anger you? Does it bother you that even though this was signed into law when it should have been inherent once we were born, that we're still having to wage battles that we thought were fought 50 years ago? That to me is what angers me the most, that we literally are spending time today relitigating and fighting battles that should have ended 50 years ago. But the reality is, when you're black in America, you're still fighting old battles because those old wounds never healed for some folks. Now there's no doubt. There's no doubt we can walk into hotels, and there's no doubt that we are not barred from renting cars and interstate travel and all those different things. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But the ugly face of racism still exists in America. It's still here because signing of a law does not change what is in somebody's heart. Signing a law does not change who they are. And you've heard me say on numerous occasions that Jim Crow may have been publicly killed, but Jim Crow still had children. And Jim Crow's children had children. And we're still dealing with the ramifications of that. We're still dealing with that today. And it is unfortunate when you are an African American. You have to keep fighting and fighting and fighting and expending all of this energy fighting battles that we thought others had taken care of. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. When we come back, it's interesting, we'll talk about the juxtaposition between the signing of the Civil Rights Act in 1964 on July 2nd, yet then the nation celebrating so-called independence on July 4th. The question is, who was celebrating? This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
23 before the top of the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Give It to Me, Baby by Rick James, single artist Thursday, playing his music all day. The question I'm posing to you. The question I'm posing to you in light of the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. What do you see as the most important issue facing African Americans 50 years after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, the signing, the passage and signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964? The number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Again, the most important issue facing African Americans 50 years after the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Joining me right now is Robert L. Woodson Sr. He is the founder and president for the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. He's also a member of the Black Advisory Board for the Republican National Committee. Bob, welcome to News One Now.
Pleased to be here.
Bob?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. One of the things that I said going to break in the last segment is that clearly so much has changed in this country with the signing of this law. The law was signed into law 50 years ago yesterday, but folks woke up today to a different and a new reality. And one of the things I said, though, that it is still unfortunate, though, is that in many ways today we are fighting, relitigating, still dealing with so many of the issues that this law supposedly addressed. And some thought at that battle, that war was over, when in fact you still have some of those battles taking place today. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not so sure we're fighting the same battles. I have to challenge you on that. I think a lot of what we are suffering now are self-inflicted wounds. Many of the violence that is going on, we as Black Americans, we have a 9/11 every 6 months where young Blacks kill other Blacks. That wasn't happening in the 60s. Prior to the 60s,
I'm not.
You're asking me what is the challenge that we have today is not external. The biggest challenge that we face today is internal. And for us to somehow suggest that the huge problems of failing schools and dangerous drug-infested communities are somehow related to some external issue, and I'm challenge you, that is not where the problem is. It is internal.
No, but I was very specific. I was very specific in my question.
Okay.
First of all, the overall question, this is what I was speaking of. So, for instance, I said, first of all, specifically, when you look at the Civil Rights Act of 1964, when the new law made it illegal to discriminate on the basis of race, color, religion,
yep.
sex, or national origin. I said earlier, even many people can go to the EEOC website and you still see numerous lawsuits and settlements where folks are still having to deal with discrimination. The law also ended school, workplace, and public facility discrimination. One of the things, though, is that we're still dealing with the vestiges of that, especially within our schools. And then, of course, it dealt with the unequal application of voting registration requirements. And what we're still dealing with, we're still fighting voting issues today. Now, again, there are a couple of things. I was very specific to that the law, and we're still having to fight things that the law was supposed to have changed. But the other question I asked, which is what you actually spoke on, was that broader question, and which is why also, because there's two separate things. The broader question was, what do people see today as the most important issue facing African Americans? And so when I spoke of the law, I was speaking that we're still dealing with school issues, still dealing with voter registration or voting issues, and still dealing with discrimination in the workplace.
No, okay, let's say if I agree with you. The question is, how much time and energy should we be devoted to addressing those versus some of the more lethal issues that are confronting us? It's a matter of priorities. Okay, let's assume that you have those issues. Should we be putting most of our time and energy confronting those problems, or should we be devoting most of our time and energy confronting some of the more critical issues that have a devastating effect of actually taking lives? And that's the challenge that I think the kind of dialogue we need to have.
Well, I think it's always one of those things that, depending upon what your station is in life, is what you're focusing on. I mean, I'll say that for me personally, I certainly believe that voting is a fundamental issue. It is. I mean, we talk about the cornerstone of democracy, and when you're having to deal with these ridiculous changes in voting laws that clearly are about trying to impact elections and who gets elected, that is still a critical issue in terms of voter suppression, in terms of you look at, I mean, all of a sudden we have successes in voting in terms of people turning out in record numbers, and then we have legislatures largely run by Republicans looking to cut early voting hours and moving voting polls and all the different things like that. That is still a critical issue. And so
What is the purpose of voting? Wasn't it to elect black people to positions of political power so that they can begin to implement policies that are more helpful to us? Isn't that the purpose of voting? And then we achieved and we have blacks down in positions of running Detroit, for instance, for the last 40 years, or Newark, or Washington, D.C. So
that is one aspect. And anybody who has heard this show, anybody who has heard me speak, well, first of all, here's the deal. I'm up against the break. But anybody who's heard me speak will understand that what I've always said is that was one of the issues, but clearly coming out of 1968-70, even in 72, the mistake was black folks thinking that the political process was the complete savior, when at the economic piece that King was talking about was even more critical coming out of Jim Crow laws. Hold tight 1 second, going to a break. Folks, we're talking about the issue of 50 years later after the Civil Rights Act. I still want to know, give me a call, what do you think is the most important issue facing African Americans today, 50 years later? I'll take your phone calls. 15 before the top of the hour. This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Tim, before the top of the hour, welcome back. News One Now, Single Artist Thursday, playing Rick James all day. Folks, right now, my guest this hour is Bob Woodson, founder and president of the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise. He's also a Black Advisory Board member for the of the Republican National Committee. Bob, I made the point going to break that I have never believed that achieving equality, achieving significant numbers solely in the political on the political side was somehow the path to freedom. And I've interviewed a number of people who attended the Black Political Convention in Gary, Indiana in 1972. And there's the belief that, that coming out of that was really a focus when anybody who looked at what Dr. King was looking at coming out of 1963. And then of course, what he was doing in 68, that economic equality was had to happen as well. And so, go ahead and make your point, because you were talking about that whole issue of just politics as somehow being the savior, if you will.
Well, politics was intended to get so that we can put people in a position so they could put an economic agenda together and improve the quality of education. But what happened is that too many of the people who got into office began to concentrate on satisfying their own needs. If you look at Detroit, Kwame Kirkpatrick, you look at Marion Barry, you look at some of these people who got elected to help us, and they're helping themselves. And so instead of using that political power to mount an economic agenda, many of them established corrupt relationships with developers to enrich themselves at the expense of low-income people. But we don't
first of all, I mean, is grossly correct that we won't discuss it. I mean, I think a number of people have discussed it. No, a number of people have discussed it, and, you know, we certainly have as well. But also, I don't see, first of all, I don't hold up a Kwame Kilpatrick or things that Marion Barry did as somehow as the be-all to end-all of Black politicians. I mean, I can certainly look at you can bring up what Kwame Kilpatrick did, but I can certainly bring up what a Maynard Jackson did, what an Andrew Young did in terms of putting together an economic agenda, and individuals who were greatly successful in doing that. I mean, I can certainly look at any number of other people as well. So again, I'm not going to somehow break down the influence of solely two Black mayors when there were many others who were doing those things. Today, Michael Coleman, what he is doing in Columbus, Ohio, is phenomenal as well. I can think back to Kurt Schmoke, what he was putting in place in Baltimore, what Stephanie Rawlings Blake is doing today in Baltimore as well. And so there are a number of African-American politicians who are leading in this particular area.
No, I agree with you, but the point is we really need to talk about what are our strengths and what are our weaknesses. There's a combination. But the point is we need to have an agenda that concentrates less on voting rights and what on economic development. There was a time in America when every major city had a Black-run hotel and a business. We owned our own. We started in 1863, our own railroad, when we were 1,000 Blacks were fired from the docks of Baltimore, Maryland. Our young people and others need to understand that our economic plight was never defined by what white people permitted us to do. And if we achieved this kind of economic success in the face of discrimination, we can do it today. But this is the kind of discussion we need to have, is how can we take what we accomplished in the past under very difficult circumstances, then recreate that in today's environment where we come together to talk about wealth creation.
When we come back, Bob, I want to talk about, though, what we're also dealing with coming out of that is obviously the issue of access to capital, which is a critically important issue. That's one of the things that we'll talk about. Folks, the question I'm posing to you, what do you find to be the most important issue facing African-Americans today, 50 years after the Civil Rights Act? The number to call is 877-373-9766. This is News One Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Welcome back, News One Now, on Thursday, July 3rd, 2014. I'm Roland Martin. Glad to be with you. Rick James, Single Artist Thursday, playing Rick James all day, as we always do. Every Thursday, when we choose one artist, they got the hits, we play them. We are talking, of course, about the Civil Rights Act of 1964, signed into law on yesterday. And today, 50 years ago, folks in this country woke up to a new reality. Some say yesterday was the same as today. For others, it was the beginning of a new America. And there's no doubt a lot has changed. A lot has changed. And one of the things that also took place with the passage of that particular law is that you actually had bipartisanship take place. It was critically important, the role that Republicans played in the passing of this bill, making it reality. The forces that were most against it were Dixiecrats, Southern Democrats, who were some of the most virulent racists you have ever seen, especially, Senator Eastland from Mississippi, Strom Thurmond of South Carolina. We can go down the line, all of those racist Southern Democrats. And what's crazy is when you look at the total dysfunction in Washington, D.C., it would be a shock today if such a monumental bill could even get passed today in our crazy Congress. But so be it. The question I'm posing to you, the most important issue facing African-Americans 50 years later, my guest, we're talking to Bob Woodson about this. Of course, Bob Woodson is a member of the Republican National Committee, Black Advisory Board. He has also been involved over the years dealing with the issue of economics. And Bob, one of the things that I think is critically important is as we move this thing forward, is we do recalibrate the focus in terms of how much time is spent on various things. There's no doubt in my mind that economics has to be at the forefront. You look at last year, the Small Business Administration, the Wall Street Journal had a piece about 3 months ago laid out that SBA-backed loans, $23.09 billion in loans were provided to small businesses. African Americans got 1.7% of that. One of the reasons, obviously, was because of many of these small business owners' credit scores were greatly impacted by the housing market. 53% of black wealth was wiped out due to the home foreclosure crisis. We were also looking at the idea of access to capital today in terms of where capital markets, many of our entrepreneurs are frozen out as well. This really is a significant economic game and that we're dealing with.
No, I agree with you, but we need to put all options on the table. And I think there's an awful lot that we can learn from the past. Some years ago, I wrote a book called On the Road to Economic Freedom, where I brought together a lot of the black scholars and business leaders that have studied how we accumulated capital at a time that we were discriminated against, where we didn't have any access to banks. How did we get the funding for railroads, for the construction of hotels, of small businesses? At one point, we had a real estate company in Harlem in the 1930s that had 200 employees. And so how did we accumulate that capital? And it's very instructive to see how we did it then, to see if there's any implications for what we can do today. That's all I'm saying, is that we built hotels. I mean, I can name them, the Wallahatchie in Atlanta, the Carver and the Calvert Hotel. But what happened is all in the Haytai section of Durham, North Carolina, was known as the Black Wall Street. Not a single one of those 100 businesses went under during the Depression because blacks organized a boycott where we actually encouraged people to buy from our stores. But all of that economic gain was destroyed in 3 years with urban renewal. They wiped out 100 black businesses and 600 residential communities in the name of urban renewal. The Carver Hotel in Miami, there's a freeway that came through there. It's when we began to elect people to political office and they ignored the reality that we must have an economic base and strengthen those existing institutions Knight Raiders of the Klan, because we took our eye off the economic development as critical to our future. And we started to talk about social injustice as opposed to economic parity. Right in the city of Washington, D.C., we are seeing a tremendous erosion of black, even residential. The average cost of a house in D.C. is $500,000. In 5 years, it'll be $1 million. Guess what?
Right.
You will be hard-pressed to find very many black folks in Washington, D.C., in the next 5 years. Well, what are our politicians doing to develop economic policies that promote the interests of those people? There's where we need to be having discussions. There's where we need to be putting our energies. What are we doing to offer alternatives, economic strategies to address those challenges? In almost every city, you will find gentrification. If you were to ride down Washington, my hometown of Philadelphia, and look at all the construction jobs and look at how many people who are black working on those construction jobs, they're not there.
Look, I can tell you, that's the issue that I've been fighting for quite some time. Bob, when we come back, I want to ask you this here for the last segment with you. And I know, callers, I'm going to come to you. Trust me. So just hold tight 1 second, 877-373-9766. When we come back, Bob, I want to know, how do you see black Republicans, black Democrats, black independents coming at the table together to specifically deal with the issue of economic equality in the 21st century? That's what I want to know when we come back from break. Folks, this segment of the show brought to you by Bahamas.com. That's right, Bahamas.com. Your island in the Bahamas, dream getaway can be a reality. Go to Bahamas.com for more details or book now. Call 1-800-BAHAMAS. That's 1-800-BAHAMAS. 8 after the hour. News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
For the hour. Welcome back, News 1 Now. Talk with Bob Woodson about the issue of Civil Rights Act 50 years later. Bob, I posed the question before we went to break. And callers, first of all, you can give me a call, 877-373-9766. I'm hitting the phone lines after this question. Bob, I pose the question, if we're talking about moving the ball forward when it comes to economic rights, one of the things I look at, you look at the BE 100 list that just came out. You look at the folks on there. One of the things that I've said before, and I've met him numerous times, the number one business on the list, David Stewart's business out of Worldwide Technology out of St. Louis, African-American owned, does more than $1 billion in business, Republican. The issue to me when it comes to advancing an economic agenda is not for me a question of party. It's a matter of policy. And so what does it require, and when could it potentially even happen where you literally have individuals who come to the table who say, this ain't about a D or R, it's about B, black?
Well, Roland, I think the kind of leadership that you are exhibiting by even posing the question in your position is a start, because there are very few people who are raising those kind of questions. And I have to give a shout out to Congressman Benny Thompson from Mississippi. Last summer, he invited me to the retreat that the Caucus Foundation has every summer, where they have about 100 young black Democratic activists from around the country come together. And I had a delightful seminar with them for about 3 hours, where we talked about the things around which we agree and leave off the table things where we disagree. And I had a great time, and I think they benefited from it. I benefited from it, and I think we've got to do this. We got to expand that. I'm down in Washington, D.C. at 16th and K Street. That's where all the lobbyists are. When I look out my window, every lobby office, every law firm has a Democratic desk and a Republican desk. So no matter who wins, they win. we must begin to be sophisticated enough to do the same, to say that it is the rules of the game that determine winners and losers, not the D or the R, is the rules of the game. And we have got to begin to bring people together across the political divide and begin to look at what are the rules that are restricting our participation and what agenda for changing the rules can we present that promotes the interests of our people. That's what we must do. And I think that what you're doing, even by posing that question, is an excellent start.
Well, the thing for me is very simple, and I've said this numerous times, which is one of the reasons why I have been highly critical and have pressed Reince Priebus hard and other Republicans, because I've always made the point that, look, we can't talk about issues if then we don't actually talk. That's one.
Right.
But two, for African Americans, I've been very clear. That is, when you look at more than 50% of black folks living in southern states, you have Republicans who are governors who control the state legislature. My deal is I don't believe being locked out because black folks might vote Democrat. The reality is I keep saying we are still constituents.
Still,
bottom line is people still serve us. It's like I'm watching, you know, this nut, and I will say he's a nut because some of his rhetoric is ridiculous. I'm hearing Chris McDaniel talk in Mississippi, and I'm like, Chris, the people who voted are Mississippi residents. No one party controls an election. And I think it is, but I do think that for African Americans, the most important thing for me is stopping the nonsense of Uncle Tom, of sellout, or whatever, and say, because I know a lot of, black conservatives, I know a lot of black Republicans, and my whole deal is there are people who have the best interests of black folks at heart, and then there are folks who don't on both sides. This is an economic issue in what we are looking at.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
News One Now with Roland Martin. There's slight technical difficulty there, so it happens. But I am back. I want Bob to Woodson to complete his final comment before I go to the phone lines. So Bob, go right ahead.
Well, I just think that it's refreshing to have some honest discussion and debate without people calling people names. And I think what I've tried to do is to talk about what are the issues around which we can agree, and let's discuss that. And then have some, because every other group does the same thing. As I said, there are law firms that I'm all around downtown, and every one of them has as a Republican and a Democratic desk. So no matter who wins, they win. And I think, so it's important for us to be competitive, to be at the table. So when they talk about immigration reform, no one says, well, what is the black community's position on that, because it's in a lockbox. And so therefore, if people don't feel they have to offer you anything, they're not going to. Why do they have to spend money trying to get persuade you? I really think it's important for the Republicans to be competitive for the black vote with the Democrats, and everybody wins as a consequence. So I think anything that we can do to promote greater dialogue and discussion toward the end of improving the lot of black community is really worth it. And I appreciate, Roland, you're doing that.
All right. Bob Woodson, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much, sir.
Thank you, Roland.
Thank you. Let's go to the phone lines. Fred from Atlanta, GA, listening via WAOK. Fred, you're on News One Now. What's your comment?
Hey, I agree with your guest that, you know, I don't even talk about civil rights issues, but I think the primary issue is the dissolution of the black family because of the Great Society program. And after that, it's sort of a drop in morality in the black community that I think has resulted from those same policies. But if you want to look specifically at the civil rights kinds of issues, I think the challenge to our voting and the challenge to our citizenship because of all of the unchecked illegal immigration that's coming in. I know that the Democrat Party just says, well, any brown or black person is going to vote for them. But what is it? How is it affecting young black people when a lot of the entry-level unskilled jobs are being given to illegal aliens and we got the highest unemployment rate? It doesn't help us. And just recently, just people streaming across the border and the border agents having to take care of unaccompanied minors rather than protecting the border. That hurts black people in the long run. They're coming to our cities, Miami now, Hispanic mayors, Los Angeles, Hispanic mayors, even our political power in some of the urban areas that when the Hispanics become the majority, they vote for each other. So, I mean, you know, even our black power base is affected. So I just think that, you know, if you want to look specifically at the civil rights issues, let's not manufacture issues. Let's not, you know, we want to talk about, no, we can't get an ID to vote. That's ridiculous.
Well, first of all, that's not a manufactured issue. Look, I've covered that in a huge, huge way. And it is a deliberate attempt by folks, especially when you look at areas like where Pennsylvania, where the whole idea was we're implementing a law for the purpose of voter fraud. Yet when they got sued, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania submitted documents. It's written. I read them, stating we have absolutely no evidence of that. And so I'm not gonna play that silly game saying that's a manufactured issue. It is a real issue when we know what the motive and the intent is.
Yeah, but just because you can't find the evidence doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It just means
nice try. Okay, but if you want to come up with a solution, if you want to come up with
you brought it up.
And I'm saying for somebody who's listening, that is a solution in search of a problem, and that's what it is. And so I'm not clueless as to why that law is being pushed so hard. You know as well what the real deal is.
Do white people have to follow the same rules?
And wait a minute, and they're screwed as well. Don't think for a second that elderly white folks
even playing field.
No. But here's the deal: if it is unjust, then it deserves to be fought.
I have never met one black person who's ever said they couldn't vote. Not one.
Are you nuts? Oh my goodness. Okay, you literally just had an 80-plus-year-old black woman in Alabama who couldn't vote. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. So you talk about somebody who, right? Jim Wright, the former Speaker of the House of the United States, who lives in Fort Worth, Texas. Jim hasn't driven in years. Guess what? Because Jim Wright did not have a driver's license, Jim Wright was turned away from voting.
Oh, and he couldn't get a photo ID. He couldn't get any kind of other photo ID.
Let me say it again, because since you said about, I haven't met anybody. The former Speaker of the House was impacted by it, and my point is, let's not act like those laws have been put in place. Not that for a reason.
Okay, well, fine. That inconvenience will not stop you from voting.
Anytime somebody says we've got bigger fish to fry, you know what that means? I don't really want to talk about this topic. Okay,
I think it's ridiculous.
Okay,
I mean, how did Barack Obama get reelected if black folks had their vote so challenged?
Oh my goodness,
we voted in record numbers.
Here's the deal: if I have to explain to you what is happening with the very clear attempt to suppress vote, I'm sorry, you need more help. So.
And I just disagree that it's being effective. It isn't being effective.
All
Barack Obama would not have been reelected. That is not our big issue. Our big issue, like your guest said,
I didn't say that was our big issue. It's a issue.
The black schools don't function. The black communities that are unsafe.
All right.
We got so many more important things to focus on, but
we spend
an inordinate amount of time on these kinds of issues.
And here we go. Whenever
it's been a month talking about.
Well, guess what? And we'll continue to do so. I could talk about a whole bunch of stuff. My brain can work on more than just one issue. I can guarantee you that. Folks, give us a call, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Take your phone calls with the question, what do you find to be the most important issue facing African Americans today, 50 years after the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was signed? Doing all phone calls from now until the top of the hour. I'm Roland Martin. Back in a moment.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
23, 24. Top of the hour. Welcome back, News One Now. Going right to the phone lines. Number to call is 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766. Charles from Washington, D.C., listening via WOL 1450. You're on News One Now. What's your comment?
Morning, Roland.
Yes, sir.
Okay, quickly, I think if we can solve the pension crisis we have in our community, that will help us solve a lot of problems. If we can gain some real political independence, that would be very helpful to our issue as a community. Economic unity, Roland, I think would solve a lot of problems. I mean, we have way too much money as a people to have an unemployment rate as high as it is. And then we got to fix this crisis in black leadership. I mean, if we can solve that crisis and get true and effective leaders in place, we can turn our community around.
What does that even mean, this crisis in black leadership? What does that mean?
Well, very, very quickly, the leadership class, whether it be in business or in politics, is not unified. You have divides when you have Sharpton, Jackson, and Farrakhan who can't come together and collaborate and move our issues forward. If they are our three most prominent leaders, then in the best interest of our community, then those three men, because they're the most prominent, should be able to come unify and lead our community forward.
But here's the deal, though. Those are not the three most prominent, quote, leaders. First of all, do you realize the number of leaders that we have? Do you realize that in terms of, what are you actually looking at? See, I don't see that to me is one of the fundamental problems, that we fall for this notion of, oh, this is our leader. No, I'm sorry. I don't fall for that. I believe.
Well, of course.
There are a number of people who are doing things out here who are leading. And so, to me, but here's the deal. I'm not going to say, "Oh, Reverend Jackson, Sharpton, and Farrakhan, it's on you." No, it's not.
I'm not trying to put all the weight on their back, Roland. And of course, leadership does start in the home. That's why I mentioned parenting. But when you look at it from a nationalistic perspective, when you look to who black people look to, it's Farrakhan, Jackson,
but you're making the mistake because the reality is. Again, you're making the mistake. The reality is more people are impacted what is happening on a local level than what is happening on a national level.
Certainly.
So part of the problem is let's stop looking to some national leader when it's actually who are the people leading in local communities. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, in that regard, I can somewhat agree with you, but from a nationalistic perspective,
but I just told you it's not a question of national, because the issues that we are most affected are not happening on the national level. They're happening on the state and local level. Okay.
Take for example the local level. You have Al Sharpton, who's built this national
Stand by, Roland.
You have Al Sharpton, who's built this national action network with chapters in most American cities. Push has done the same thing. The Nation of Islam has done the same thing.
Here's the fundamental problem, and I got to go to the next caller. What you is wrong, because the reality is this here. The organization that actually has more chapters with more people that are actually active is the NAACP.
And but aren't they impotent?
No, they're not right impotent. Now? No, they're not.
Why,
and that's the point. You are making the assumption that our community is in the condition that it's in, if they're so powerful. First of all, I will say this here. Our community would be in a worse situation if it wasn't for local NAACP chapters.
But
that's
isn't the NAACP beholden to the people who are funding it?
Oh, my goodness. Dude, come on. Seriously? Oh, so you think nobody?
I am dead serious.
So you think anybody else you named is it?
I think Farrakhan is certainly independent. Jackson and
okay.
Sharpton, I'm not so sure about them.
All right. Okay. Look, Charles, I got lots of folks to hold.
Thank you, man.
Let me go to Lee calling from Dallas, Texas. Lee, you're on News One Now. What's your comment?
Hello, Roland. I strongly feel that the greatest battle that African Americans need to contend with on this 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act is dealing with the greatest conspiracy that's victimizing the community, in my humble opinion, and that is the government-controlled K-12 schools. They are a complete catastrophe, and there is not one major urban school system in the United States, and as most of those have a high concentration, if not predominantly, minority student base or pupil base, not one is even close to acceptable on graduation rates, dropout rates, international test score rankings. Not one. The only one even close is Boston, and they spend $24,000 a head, which is enough to have tuition to a good private school in most cities in this country. And it's the great secret. You're never, you know, the first thing out of, and I've certainly done a lot of study on this, paid a lot of attention to these issues. The first thing you hear, and perhaps Roland, you can tell me if you agree with this, when people talk about what's hurting the black community, what needs to be corrected, where are they the most disadvantaged, it is those K through 12 schools. But you're not going to hear Nancy Pelosi talk a lot about that, or Harry Reid, because there's an execrable cabal between that superstructure, not just the teachers' unions, which get demonized, but the whole administrative superstructure.
But here's what you have, Lee. But Lee, here's the thing. Here's the thing that we have to own to acknowledge. We talk about our school system. Our schools are based upon a neighborhood concept. A neighborhood.
Wait.
A neighbor. Here's the deal. Neighborhoods are also based upon income in terms of the value of those homes, and those incomes are also based upon who is able to get those high-paying jobs. And the reality is, all these things are linked. I don't look at the problem of schools solely as being this isolated thing that's sitting over there. There are other, so many other factors that go into what is happening with our schools. But I do agree, it is one of the fundamental issues that black folks have to face with, contend with 50 years after the Civil Rights Act. Lee, I'm going to a break. You make a great comment. I'm going to take more of your phone calls, 877-373-9766, 877-373-9766, 16. Before the top of the hour, this is News One Now.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
One now, 11 before the top of the hour, folks. I'm going to go right to the phone lines. Let's go to, and again, folks, be quick with your comments. Let's go. Amadou, Atlanta, Georgia. Listen via WAOK. Go right ahead.
Roland, you hear me?
Yes, go.
I salute you for what you're doing, man. That brother Charles you just had on from D.C.
Right.
Man, right on the money, Roland. I want you to get with us, Roland. Look here. My daddy sent me to Morehouse College.
Right.
Back in the 60s. Then he sent me up to Howard University, where he went to dental school.
Okay.
I graduated from Howard in political science. Now, check this out.
You got about 30 seconds. You got 30 seconds. Go.
Hey, man, look, you with this time thing. Look, let me tell you something. It's so-called Negroes like you that's our worst enemy. You understand what I'm saying?
All right, I'm going to do. First of all, Doc, bottom line is here. I got 7 calls on the line. There are 5 minutes. And so there's going to be a time limit. So you wasted 15 seconds. You got 15 more. Go. Okay. All right. Thanks a bunch. Appreciate it. So it's all good, bro. Let's go to David in Atlanta. David, go.
Sir, look, earlier you had a gentleman on there who mentioned Durham, North Carolina, the Black Wall Street.
Yep.
There's a film on YouTube, Negro Durham Marches On. It's about 29 minutes. It shows blacks with their own cab companies.
Okay.
Hospitals, moving companies. It's very impressive. You should see it. Thank you.
I will do. I'll look it up. I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much, sir. Let's go to Joseph calling from Murphy, Texas. Joseph, you're on News One Now. What's your comment?
Hey, Roland. How you doing? First of
Great.
All, I want to say I appreciate what you're doing for the community. I think the problem is I understand that, you know, black people aren't a monolithic community. However, if everybody who gets up there and offers their opinions on how things should be done would go down to their local NAACP chapter or
right.
something like that, or donate some time and money, you know, I think that would help, you know, foster or, you know, create an environment where, you know, black people can, you know, aspire and, you know, progress.
Okay. Great point, sir. I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Let me go to Sean calling from Bowie, Maryland, listening via WOL. Sean, what's your comment?
Roland, I think when you break it down, there are a lot of different factors, but I think it still comes down to the family. I think the key in everything is the breakdown of the family, whether you're talking about economics. When you've got divorce and single parenthood, there's no capital to start the businesses. When you look at the breakdown of the family, even though you may have the highest quality schools, private schools, wherever you send your children, education still needs to be emphasized in the home. And gotcha. So even if kids do well in school, there's still always an emphasis of the education that's done at home. So once the family's broken down, 70% of our kids being born out of wedlock, you can't overcome those statistics. I don't care how many black businesses or other things you try to develop. The family has to become stronger for us to impact everything else.
All right. I certainly appreciate it, sir. Thank you so very much. Let's go to GC, listening via WDBZ 1230 The Buzz in Cincinnati. GC, you're
okay,
on News 1
you
now.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, my comment is this. I heard someone talking about local NAACP versus the National Action Network, and you even came here and spoke and kind of saw some issues as it relates to our local chapter of the NAACP, where we got a juvenile court judge that's being raked over the coals, civil rights issue, and the allegiances that they have with other organizations and agencies. They have not spoken once, not two, three times, but not one time on her behalf.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. This is very simple for me.
Okay, I don't have much time, Roland.
Here's my whole point, GC.
Okay.
If you are speaking out, if an organization is not speaking out, you go to somebody who is.
Guess what we did? We started, and I was one of the ones included, the National Action Network here in this city.
Good.
And speaking out. And Roland, I think you should hear her story, because guess what? When it does hit the national media, y'all gonna want to get on board then. I've tried to call you about this issue. Judge Tracy Hunter is being raped over the coals in this city, and it is about to go national. You need to hear the story, Roland.
Shoot an email.
You'll listen to her story.
Shoot an email. That's all you got to do.
Okay? I
appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Real quick, Francis from D.C., listening via WOL. I got 30 seconds. Go, Francis.
Okay, I think that most people would say that Jewish people have been successful as a minority group, and I don't think that they would have been as successful unless all of them, whether they were liberal or conservative, recognized they had a common problem of anti-Semitism, and all they don't let it go. And we need to be focusing on the thing that affects us all, and that's racism. As long as we don't
Francis, I'm out of time. Sorry about that. Folks, I got to go. Coming up at the top of the hour, we have more News 1 Now. I will see you, though. New Orleans, tomorrow, Essence Fest. I'm Roland Martin. Have a great day. Holla!
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.